everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. In this week's episode, you're going to hear the second half of my exclusive interview with David Jacoby that took place back in 2018. Last week, the majority of the interview was focusing on David retracing his steps and going through the timeline of events the best that he could remember from the night that Stevie, Michael, and Christopher went missing. In this second hour of the interview, we're now going to hear what life has been like for David since Stevie Branch, Michael Moore, and Christopher Byers were murdered. We're going to hear about the steps that he's taken to try to help investigators along the way, and how up until now, providing that help has done nothing for him but drive him out of his home and his business. At the very beginning of this interview, my voice is going to sound muffled and far away for the first couple of questions. That's because I had a mic error on my mic, so you're only picking me up through David's mic. But after a few minutes, that gets straightened out and the audio should be pretty good. The first question that I asked David is the question that many of you have been asking me. Does David remember if Terry changed his clothes that night? Let's get right into the interview.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that you did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you recall if Terry ever changed clothes during the day?
No, and yeah, and I've been asked that a million times, and it's something I do. I don't look at their clothes when people knock on my door, either. You know, and when if we're out looking for a kid, the last thing I'm going to think of is hey, what kind of shoes you got on? What kind of pants you wearing?
Right.
You know, it's something I don't know if anybody does that really. I mean, unless something's happened that's drawn your attention, you know, like maybe you dropped. Spilled a soda on you or something, and you had to go home and change.
That's the thing. If you don't remember that stuff, if you don't know you're supposed to be looking for something, you don't know your stuff.
Yeah, and you know, back then, like I said, when I come home from work, you know, if depending on how hard the day was, especially that work. Now, when I come home from work, iron work, I'm nasty, dude. I come home, I take my clothes off, I jump in the shower, you know, I get cleaned up, put some decent clothes on, or if I'm not planning to go anywhere, maybe I'll put my shorts on and some flip-flops or sandals and walk through the house. But that job, I mean, only time you got dirty is when you sit down in the truck if you'd spilt something in your seat while you was driving down the road eating. So, you know, if it was hot, then yeah, maybe I'd have dropped my jeans and throwed on some shorts and flip-flops. But I can remember, you know, thinking I need to put my boots on because I didn't. It was muddy out there. It just rained. I mean, it rained its ass off. And I remember, you know, I had to put my boots on. Oh, that's why, yeah. And it's, again, that don't register with me at the point. Oh, yeah, that's why. It don't register with me at the point, you know. That's actually a drainage ditch or bayou, whatever it is. I can just remember that water rolling. I mean, buddy, it was coming. And you'd see sticks. Branches in there, and then they'd roll, and then they'd suck down, you know, and then they'd go, and then you see them pop up down the ways a little bit, and I thought, man, that'd be pretty deep, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how deep it was, but it was within a couple of feet of touching that pipe, you know, that night. I can remember that. Mm-hmm. If you'd have, you know, people say they could put boats in there and go down on the boat, if you'd have done, you'd have decapitated yourself if you was trying to
one side or the other.
Yeah, I mean, if you're standing up, it would probably got you in the way. Sitting down, it probably took your head off from your shoulders up. But and I can remember us, you know, me and Jackie both was talking about falling off. I mean, we kind of looked, and was, what if a kid got up there and fell off, or you know, and we looking, and you see how far the water kind of goes before it would bend. And we try to look and say, well, you know, it would probably take them to this point. And we did. We walked back. We got on the pipe after that. We did. We got on the pipe and on the beams and just looked down. I mean, you know, and kind of look up and say, well, you know, if you fell in here, you'd probably wind up here. And by that time, there's so many people probably done been through there, we'd never found nothing anyway. And we decided to just turn around and go back to the truck. And we looked as we was going back to, and we never seen nothing.
One thing I wanted to ask you is, what really was your relationship with Terry? The documentaries kind of made it look like you guys were best of buddies. But from us talking, it didn't seem like you actually really knew him all that well.
No, I didn't. I didn't know him all that well. I knew only what he had told me, and if Pam had mentioned anything, I would have known, that. But Pam was actually the link between me and Terry, and Pam was also friends with my wife, and they actually was, this is known as the Blyville area, but the little suburbs of Blyville, or if you want to call them that, the little towns, you have a place, Armorell and Huffman, just little small towns. And they were from, Armorell was where my wife was from. They lived, out that way. And Branches, which was Stevie's real father, they lived over in that area for a good while, and Pam was married to Steve Branch, and anyway, they had known each other. My wife's youngest sister went to school with Pam and would come over to their house, and that's the way she met him, and she had known Steve Branch, and I'd met Steve Branch years while they were, I think they were just getting a divorce. I didn't know at the time, but I knew she was married to Steve Branch, and I knew Steve Branch from, the younger times, the younger days when we were young. We were, they'd have little parties out there at the river, and I met Steve Branch out there, but I really didn't know him very well, but I knew him when I saw him, and I would speak to him, but it wasn't no hangout. But anyway, Pam had introduced me. We'd bumped into him in West Memphis, and she, looked at me real funny and said, "Well, what are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, we live here." I told her me and Bobby had moved to Memphis back in '89 and lived over there for a little while, and we kept getting broken into. So we wound up moving across the bridge and to West Memphis so I'd be closer to work. And anyway, she asked what we're doing there, and I explained it to her, and she says, "Okay, well, I'll bring my husband by some night." I said, "Well, you do that. Come on by." I said, "Bobby would be glad to see you." And it wasn't long, They came by, and she introduced Terry, and he seemed like a good guy. I mean, he was, low-key and mellow, and he spoke, he was well-spoken. He didn't, a lot of profanity or nothing out of line, And anyway, that was the beginning, and he noticed I had a guitar sitting in the corner of the living room, and say he also played guitar, and one of my extra bedrooms, I had all my music stuff, amps and guitars, banjos, just different musical items. And I took him back there. He picked up the guitar, started playing, and, we kind of hit it off on, as far as playing guitar. It was kind of neat to have somebody to play with. I was teaching my youngest daughter, or my oldest daughter, how to play, and trying to anyway. And she learned a few chords, but anyway, she wasn't but 5 years old. But, maybe once, twice a week, they might stop by in the evenings, and it was getting on, about to, get on to be summer around Memphis, and I was dreading that heat that year. I mean, I'd been working out in that stuff damn near all my life, but.
You were an iron worker.
I was an iron worker, yes, and I loved it, and I really enjoyed working. I loved the workout. It was a workout. You had a good workout. You stayed in good shape. You also got paid good money. So, it worked out for me. But, man, the heat would kill you, that Memphis heat, the humidity. And I wasn't looking forward to another tough summer. I'd had three or four there in a row prior, and I was really dreading it. But anyway, I told Terry I was going to go find me something to do, through the summertime, because I didn't want to spend another summer in Memphis. I'd done worked out of state a bunch of times, up north, and those summers are a lot easier than these, but he told me about where he worked and was selling ice cream at these, not these big grocery stores, but these smaller mom and pop stores, out in the country. And he's talking about, hey, how much money he made and all that. And he said they were talking about hiring another driver. And I, my brother worked for Dr. Pepper when I was younger, and he was younger, but I would go up and I had a part-time job with him when I would get out of school, and I'd go up to Dr. Pepper and I'd help stock the trucks. So I said, man, I don't know nothing about selling nothing. I said, I used to load my brother's truck all the time, you know, and got a part-time job doing that, loading all the trucks at, you know, in the evening times. And I said, but man, yeah, if I can pay my bills and feed my kids, then man, I'd do that until, you know, fall, and I'd, you know, go back to what I do, because I'd make what I thought would be a lot more money than that. But anyway, I went ahead and I thought about, well, I'd try that. And I went up to talk to him at the ice cream place and wound up getting a job. And then, like I say, we would ride to work together for, you know, first couple of weeks we did, and talked and, you know, go to work. He kind of showed me how, you know, the ins and outs of this route, that route, and where to go and what to stay away from. And anyway, that's about as close as we really got. I mean, work, and maybe on the weekend, one day him and Pam would stop by with the kids and we'd let the kids play. I'm not no beer drinker. I think I might have drank a beer or two with him the whole time I known him. It's got to be awful hot outside for me to drink a beer, because I really don't have the taste for it. But socially, I would drink a beer with him, and you know, we might play the guitar when the kids play. And, I think one time we did throw some hamburgers on the grill and let the kids, you know, have hamburgers and hot dogs and let them play. But other than that, it was just, you know, every now and then come by, he'd pick up a guitar, pick up mine. We might try to play a song. But he, like I say, he seemed like a good guy. You know, if he'd said it, come up to me, hey, can I borrow $20? I'd loan him $20. I mean, that's, you know, that kind of a deal. But we wasn't best buds. I mean, I learned a long time ago, best buddies ain't very good to have, it didn't seem like back then. But I don't know. I was more of a, not a loner. I just didn't, you know, I grew up in a big family, but I did spend a lot of time alone. And I enjoyed my time alone, you know.
I mean, well, he had a house full of kids too.
Well, yeah. And I had a house full of kids, and you know, and it wasn't that I just didn't want to go shoot pool or go do this, go do that. You know, I realized that caused a lot of arguments with families, and it wasn't worth it to me to, you know, to have fights and arguments over stuff like that. I could stay busy right there at home, you know, play with the kids a little while, play my guitar a little while, go to bed, get up, go to work over and over and over. But, we weren't the best of buds, but, you know, I can't think of any problem. We never had a fight, argument, or nothing like that, but it's just, there's nothing like they try to portray. We were best friends. It was we'd live there maybe a year before we ran into him, and I think a total of 3 years I lived there. So I may have known him a year and a half. Mm-hmm. It wasn't nothing like that.
So let's move on to, like you said, boys were found. They supposedly caught the people that did it, put them to trial.
Yeah,
it's over with. And then this is something you're just working to get past. Cause I know you were close to Stevie,
right?
And I know it affected you.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's I went to work. And see, we're looking and we're trying. Me and Jackie, especially, we're talking amongst ourselves quite a bit, and we're trying to think of where else to look. And I remember asking Terry. I said, "Well, his friends, you've been to every one of them's house. Have you called them? You know, or have they looked to see if he was maybe hiding in the house or?" He said, looked at the time or something. I can't remember. Or I might have said, wonder what time it is. But anyway, it was getting on a little bit after two. And he says, man, you know, only me and you know that route tomorrow's. One of us needs to be there. And I said, well, that's a no-brainer. I mean, you need to find Stevie. So, you know, I'll be there. I mean, ain't no problem. I said, I can wake up and, yeah, well, it's almost there. And I said, yeah, you're right. Just take me to the house, I guess. And I said, I'll tell them tomorrow. If, you know, you stayed out looking for Stevie. And I said, just let me know if you find him. Just let me know something. I went to work the next day and I done his route. And, it's back then, I mean, we didn't have him cell phones. It's like, you know, I think there was a few had cell phones on the market, but I couldn't afford one. But anyway, I can remember I listened to the radio doing that route, and you know, and you'd hear about it in the mornings that they're looking, and I think they tell you that they've got the search and rescue team, you know, is either coming or they've been there or just got there. I don't remember. There's just little updates every now and then on the radio station that I found, and I tried to listen as I'm doing that route. And I got over into, I think, Mississippi, and I started losing that signal, you know, and I couldn't pick that channel up, and I couldn't find another station. So I'd make it back, like, you know, it might have been 3 o'clock. Make it back, and I have to take all my tickets of the ice cream I sold, and this elderly woman there, I can't think of her name, but you take them, the tickets to her along with the money you collected, and she tallies you up, and that's a good 15-20 minute process. And I went through all that, and I'm asking, you know, her, Miss Paris is what it was. I said, has Terry been by? Has Terry called or anything? And she says, well, I heard something about, you know, Terry, but she said, I can't swear to what it was. And, you know, so I'm assuming he might have got a hold of the owner, you know, mm-hmm. and they might have said something. So I'm sitting there, and I get tallied out, and I come back out to my truck, which is, it's in the warehouse. And now I have to just make a quick list of what I need loaded up for the next day and pass it to the guy in the warehouse, and I'm ready to go home. And I can't remember if it was the owner, John Reaver was his name, but he, I don't know if it was him or his brother come in there, and it said something about they'd found the kids earlier. And I thought, all right, you know. And then he said, they were dead. Wow. You know, that just blew my mind. And I'm thinking it was that day, that afternoon, maybe. See, that was on a Wednesday that, you know, they were missing was Wednesday afternoon. And this was, I'm pretty sure it was a Thursday, the very next day. And, it was late in the afternoon, and I'm getting ready to leave. I done handed my list, and, Terry comes in. And I said, dude, well, are you all right? You know, and he said, yeah. And I said, who were they? And he goes, man, we walked right by them. I said, how could we miss them, Terry? We walked right by them. He said, we walked right by them. You know that pipe? We walked right by them. And that's all, and that's where he left it. And I know that's what stayed in my head this whole time, thinking that they were found at that pipe. But,
so he actually came to the work?
Yes.
After
yes,
they found him?
Yes. And I'm thinking it was that day. If it wasn't that day, it was the very next day, because it was right there close, you know. But that's what he said. We walked right by him. And I mean, that was in my head. And it's been there until 07 when I found out that there was actually a place, a tributary that run into the bayou, and it was back to the east of that pipe. Did it, you know, I think, you know what? How did I walk right by them? I mean, that's bugged me a lot, because I've never, the area they found those kids, I never in my life have been there. Never. I can tell you, I don't go out walking through fields and ditches and all that stuff. You know, the night the kids was missing, I did. I walked with, you know, lots of people out there, but I did not go that far. When I went to the Blue Beacon, I went to the east side on that little road he took us to and parked, and I walked straight to the southwest towards the apartments to try to find that pipe. I never once went over here. You know, like I say, that's why I believe it stuck in my head that they were found at the pipe, because he said we walked right by them, and we did. We walked right by that pipe. If they wasn't found over here by the Blue Beacon, by the fence where we parked, and I walked straight out, then I didn't walk right by them. And, man, it's just, you know, I'm thinking, well, you know, it wasn't long. I mean, it might have been a week or two, you know. I'm not sure, because I really didn't keep up with it. But when I did hear that they'd had suspects and arrested them, you know, it was like a relief, but it wasn't settled in my head, you know, because I couldn't. You know, I mean, I just tried to not think about it, man. It was hard to do. And I really never did accomplish not thinking about it. There's so many things that goes on, you know, and it triggered it. And this is one of them, unfortunately. And, I, you know, Oh, man, it's... it just blows me away, man. I mean, never expected anything like this.
Well, let's talk about what happened after that, because you mentioned 2007 when things changed.
Yeah, I'm in Little Rock working. Me and my brother's doing a job for the VA there in Little Rock. And one day, I think it was lunchtime, you know, we went back to our apartment and was eating, and I'm sitting there talking to somebody. I don't know. I had a cell phone then, you know, of course. And he come in here and said, "Hey, little brother, come here, come here." And, I mean, he calls me little brother because he's bigger than I am. I'm older than he is. He's bigger. He says, "Hey, little brother, come here. Man, they're about to arrest your buddy on TV." And I thought, "What are you talking about?" You know, and I go in there and they're talking about Terry Hobbs. And I go, "What are they talking about?" He said, "Man, they're saying he killed them kids." And man, I just, boy, I just, oh man, you know.
So that was on local news before they ever talked to you.
Oh, yes. Yes. As far as I remember, yes. And that's when I heard, I thought, what? And I'm trying to listen and listen. And he's telling me what he's been hearing, you know, because I was in another room talking on the phone. And he said, you know, gives me a little bit of rundown of what he thought he heard or what he heard. And the way I remember him saying it, you know, is they found evidence that he had done it. And I thought, man, you know, no way. I said, that ain't right. You know, I mean, there ain't no way he did that. And, you know, so I tried to listen more and more, and I'd hear a little bit of details, and I'd hear that that wasn't correct, that this was what they said, or this is what they meant. And it kind of just all, you know, back and forth. And I'm trying to wonder what's going on. And I was back in Memphis and doing a job at St. Jude, this is still going on. But I had the only people I'd ran into or actually tried to dodge was there was some people making a movie. I don't know if it was documentary or what it was. It was just, you know, they had left a card and I don't remember who they were, but it was something to do with this. And it wasn't HBO. I don't remember it being HBO. It was something else, but Star or something. But anyway,
it's probably west of Memphis.
I dodged them. I mean, I dodged them, dodged them, dodged them. I wouldn't answer my phone. I wouldn't do nothing, man. I didn't know, you know, what to do. I mean, I didn't want to talk about it for one. And maybe you can see why. I mean, I had nothing to do, but finally they tracked me down at work, you know. But this is after Terry had showed up at St. Jude's there on the job I was doing and come in the office and I'm sitting there and he says, you know, that little smirk and grin, "What are you doing?" "Well, I'm working." "What are you doing?" "I thought they done put you in jail, you know." "Man, that's bullshit, isn't it?" There's more evidence they've got. They just didn't use it. "These people are trying to make this and this and this." And he said, they're just trying to put me and you in jail. I said, "What do you mean, me and you?" "Yeah, well, they're saying me and you kill him." I said, "I ain't heard my name mentioned yet." "Oh, you will. You will." And it's kind of a weird joke, dude. I mean, what are they going to put me in jail for riding with you to go look for them kids, you know? And he said, "Oh, no, they got this. They said this, but that's all right. The prosecutor said he's got, you know, this setback and this setback. So if he needs it, I mean, they got the ones that done it. Just don't let it bother you." And then he starts talking about what we did. And you know, I'm listening to him and he's saying a few things. "No, I didn't do that, man. I sure didn't. I can tell you, I can remember, you know, I might not be able to remember step by step by step in that exact time, but I know where I went and I know what I did. And it ain't adding up to what you're saying." He said, "Well, you did. I mean, you know, I mean, you might not remember. It's been a while." "No, Terry, I know where I went, I know what I did." But it wasn't, and I was thinking, why is he even, you know, why you want to persist that? Because it was nothing real big. It was just more or less a longer stretch, you know, of where, you know, we did and
putting you with him for more of the time.
More of the time, yeah. And that started clicking on me, and I thought that was kind of odd, and I started back away, you know. And he calls one morning, and he says, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm going to work. What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I'm fixing to sue the fuck out of the Dixie Chicks." you ought to join in there with me. I said, wait, you know, and I'm, this is something else new to me because I ain't heard nothing about it. Right. What are you going to sue the Dixie Chicks for?
Right.
Well, they called me and you killers. I said, they what? He said, yeah, I got a lawyer and we're going to get $3 million. And he said, you ought to just come on, join in with us. And I said, yeah, I don't want no part of that bullshit, Terry. I said, man, what do you mean they said it? And so I started getting more information, you know, about it. And they never once said my name. What the hell? Right. I want to sue them, you know? And I told him after just about a week or so, he called back one of those. If I wanted to go with him, meet his lawyer. And I said, no, man, I got work. I got a job to do. I said, man, they didn't say my name. I said, I mean, they might have said your name, but I said, I listened to something and I said, it didn't say nothing about my name. I said, now they might have said Terry and his friend. I said, but, you know, am I your only friend or something? Is that why you're saying me? But, you know, I shrugged that shit off and let it go, and it'd go for a little while, you know, and I made the mistake of giving him my cell phone number, and oh my God, the call coming and coming and coming, you know, and I finally got to where I just wouldn't even answer.
At this point, you haven't talked to any investigators?
No, yet. That I can remember, no. It was right shortly after that, though. That's when they, I think they came to my house first, or they might have come to mom's. Either way, left a number and I called in, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, well, they want to see, you know, ask me some questions. I ain't got nothing to hide. I mean, I'll just tell them, you know, hey, this is what I done. I'll see you guys later. Good luck, you know. But, wow, I mean, it snowballed, you know. I tell them what I could remember and, you know, to the best of my memory and the times I could, you know, all I could do is go by what I normally did and then, you know, if I normally got here at this time and then all of a sudden Terry showed up, then I would have to go from there and try to, you know, piece it back together for him. And I figured that'd be tough, but it wouldn't be that bad. But, yeah, I mean, it went from, you know, just want to ask me a few questions to, can you come by the office and can you do this, to coming back with a FBI profiler or a former FBI profiler. And I thought to myself, man, it's kind of weird, you know, no serious. You know, so the guy's talking to me, you know, Rachel Geiser and John Douglas and one more person. I don't remember who it was. It was a woman, I believe, another woman. But anyway, you know, and he's telling me all these things about Terry's past, and I never knew none of this, you know. And he didn't have nothing but more than this book like that. And he's sitting there telling me just one thing after the other, after the other, after the other. And I'm saying, look, man, I said, you got anything to prove what you're saying? I said, I don't know Terry that well. I said, I've never heard of none of this. But I said, now, you know, if those kids didn't do it, they don't need to be in prison, but I can't afford to take their place. But I got a family, you know. I mean, I've done nothing. Why are you guys all on me, you know? And he just looked at me and he said, well, you know, we're kind of hoping you would help and tell us about what y'all done that night. And I said, I've told you guys what I've done, you know. And it was more like, well, was that all? And I hate somebody do me like that. If I tell you something, I used to get my ass tore up if I led, you know, somebody astray, mm-hmm. you know, if I didn't tell them the truth. And it gets me in trouble sometimes, because sometimes you really don't need to tell somebody the truth, you know. I mean, there's sometimes that you've got to kind of send them to the side a little bit to ease them, you know, cool them down. Mom can tell you the times I've got my ass tore up because somebody had said something and I wasn't supposed to say nothing, but it's the truth and I said it, right. You know, and so it's got me a bunch of times. And when they ask me, I tell them, I told them the truth. I didn't tell them nothing else. And it was just hard for me to imagine why they would, you know, be persistent. And finally, I just thought, well, I could shut him up right here. That's only a notebook. You bring me proof of what you just told me about Terry. I said, you do that. And I'll do what you need me to do to help you see if he's going to trip up. I said, I know what I done with Terry. I said, and, you know, I might not know every moment and could tag every moment with every detail, but I could tell you from one end to the other what I did and what, when he was with me. So, you bring me proof of what you just telling me that Terry has done in the past, that he's that way, and I'll help you. And he said, I'll be back. And that, I didn't see him for a while, you know, and I didn't hear from him. I didn't see him. And I thought, wow, maybe he give up. That wasn't the case. He showed back up at my door. This time he had a file, and looking back, he could have probably sat back of that car and shoved all that together from something he bought at Walmart. But I guess
this was John Douglas you're talking about, right?
John Douglas. With that playing on my mind, I mean, that I thought, well, man, he brought the shit. Oh God, you know. And I told him, you know, he got to tell him, well, let's see, in, you know, 1980 something, he did this, and he got this in 19, and I just, you know, and I said, what do you want me to do? I mean, you know, I ever since he left there, and I actually thought, well, what if he comes back with proof? I've got to, you know, I've got to help him. And I'm thinking, well, before they all got a hold of me, I'd hear it on the radio going to work, you know, they'd talk about the kids and talk about a $2 million or $200,000 reward. And I'm thinking, man, you know, did this dude do this while I was at home or something? I mean, my God, I can't. Ah, you know, and it just, I mean, I'm driving along, I'm going to work. That drive from here to Memphis was my quiet time, you know, and I enjoyed that quiet time. A little bit of music on the radio, and I'm thinking about what I've got to do today at work, and all of a sudden this West Memphis stuff comes on, and they go talking about Terry, and then they go mentioning vaguely me in a sense. I know it, because I know it's me they're talking about. And I'm, you know, my heart just, I mean, my whole body's flush. I'm barely hanging on that steering wheel thinking, what did he do? Why, you know, oh my God. And I'm my mind's doing 100,000 different things trying to figure out what in the hell I'm going to do. And, you know, it's hard to figure out, but, I'm trying to, man, if they'd have left me alone, because the whole time before they got a hold of me, I'd hear that, and I'm thinking, you know, they're talking about they're going to have an interview with Terry. I see something on the news that they'll quote something he said, and I read it in the paper, and it'd be another quote of what he did or what we supposedly did or what we did do. And I think, man, you know, if he did that, I said, I could listen to him. If he slips up, then I probably got a pretty good sense he did it, you know, and I started listening to every interview, quote, everything to see if I could catch him, you know, in my head. But before I could get all the stuff into my head, that's when they popped up with that. And, it blew me away. But anyway, John Douglas had said he had a pretty good idea on a few things we could try, you know, to see. I mean, I want the one that done it as bad as anybody else, maybe not as bad as the families, but just as much, I think. And so, you know, I wound up calling him on the phone with, you know, phone tap being recorded, you know, and John had come up with a scenario of, you know, questions to ask him and when to ask him and, you know, pieced together from what we actually did and what he was trying to say, where we went and what we did.
So they were trying to catch Terry to...
Yeah,
see, something to you.
Right. And so, you know, and he would, we did phone calls, with phone tap. I wore wires to restaurants, and met him to eat. I sat in my truck and, had him on the phone with the phone being, you know, with the conversation recorded. It was, the most I could get out of him was, you know, fuck him, fuck him. And I'm saying, Terry, they're persistent. They won't go. I can't just tell them, fuck you. They're going to go away and leave me alone. I said, every day they're here. They're beating on my door. They're beating on mom's door. They're beating at the office. They're calling the office. I said, it's got to stop. You know, sit down and talk to them. Fuck them. I ain't got to tell them shit. And I'm thinking, well, why would you not want to? Because I ain't got to tell them a damn thing. I said, Terry, if you tell them what we did that night, maybe they'd leave you alone. No, they just want to put us in prison. They want us to take their place. I said, why are you keep saying us? I said, look, you know as well as I know, my time with you was limited that night. It was scattered and limited. I said, it wasn't, you know, you were here and I was here and from, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night, we was side by side. I said, it wasn't like that. And it wasn't long before, you know, I got to interview with the police, which they, you know, they'd never come by. I expected them to come by. I remember going to work and, you know, and telling my wife, I said, you know, if the police department comes by, because, you know, and I'm thinking, well, they done, Stevie done something, or, you know, one of his friends' parents may have done something, and they're going to be a lawsuit or something. And it didn't, I guess, and maybe it did in the back of my head, but, you know, I'm thinking, you know, it's something simple, something that's going to be resolved, and he's probably going to get grounded and spanking and all this. But anyway, it you know, they never came by to see me. They never come by to ask any questions. So I'm thinking they got to wrap it. You know, wrapped it up tight. They had what they needed. I know I'm bouncing all around here, but that's what I tell you. I can't.
No, that's all right.
Man, if this was on train track, I'd have done fell. Man, I'd have blowed off a long time ago, man.
No, you're fine. So some things I just want to make sure that we point out and put on the records. I think a lot of people don't know this. You voluntarily put yourself in the position to get Terry on the phone tap. You voluntarily agreed to go wiretapping and go in person with him. And then something that I know a lot of people don't know about, you actually agreed to be hypnotized to try to help remember something.
Anything. I mean, I was, you know, at one point, I said I'd give my life to know. I still would. Just to know who the subject was that did that. I'm 54 now. I mean, I've lived a pretty good life. I mean, one thing, I've never hurt nobody. That's one thing I do. But, man, just to know who done that, I would give my life for that. They could tell me right now, sitting here, and then cut my throat afterwards, as long as somebody heard it, just so we'd know. Because some fish like that don't need to be around. You sure don't need to be on the street. But yeah, I volunteered.
He also voluntarily gave DNA, swabs, blood test, hair, all that stuff.
I'd give them everything, anything they wanted. I mean, not just because I just want to jump up and volunteer. I want them to leave me alone. But then again, I want to know who did it. And if that's what it takes is to cut my hair and take it with you, or take my cigarette butts with you, or, you know, whatever, take it. Don't matter. I mean,
So I want to point out that, you know, after John Douglas spent quite a bit of time with you, and I just spoke with Rachel Geyser yesterday about you, that both of them, John Douglas has written in his books about it, believe you have nothing to do with this.
Well, he's right. I've told them all from the beginning. I don't know. I mean, maybe. And it's just the way a person feels when he's being accused of things like this. But I can't look at myself. I can tell you what I've done myself, but I can't be out there looking at myself and say, yeah, you look guilty or you know.
Well, this is where things get twisted, because, you know, I know Rachel spent quite a bit of time with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the world's most renowned criminal behavior analyst spent time with you. Both of them said you had nothing to do with it. And then the third sequel of Paradise Lost and West of Memphis come out. And, you know, they didn't say that you had anything to do with it, but there was a hair they've supposedly found somewhere.
Maybe
in the woods
insinuated I did.
And we went through that, the result of that DNA test that says that it would match 7% of the people in the world. That's, you know, it's not your hair.
Right. It's not a match.
They can't exclude you.
That's right.
And they even said there's an anomaly in it that doesn't match yours, but they, some words that neither one of you and I understood or could read out loud, but it said that it could be because of this, and we can't exclude. I've read it says we just can't exclude you from
right. And that, and this word they used is, I tried all day long, even since last night. I mean, I've been on with Shannon and Tia. If they know this word, because it could be my hair, but this. Well, why don't they check this and see when this started? Because if they can tell, it's, you know, a lot of things. And so, you know, I just come to the conclusion myself that that hair, that one word, because of this, was more of a, I'd say, a defense bought word. Where if the prosecution had sent that to the lab to get tested, that word would not be there. It would be a not match, I believe, but I may be wrong. But since it's the defense paying the bill, And it may be wrong. And like I say, I don't know how all this stuff works. Well, I just know it ain't none of it been working in my favor.
And at the end of the day, you know, when because I work a lot of these cases, when somebody is convicted or shown a DNA match, they will say, this DNA matches. We can't. They'll say that we can't exclude you. And this DNA is unique enough that only one out of 47 million people would have this same DNA. In this case, it says 7% of the, you know, so, you know, one out of 20 people, one out of 18 people all match what they have. And the way I had it described to me in layman terms was like a DNA profile will have, say, and this isn't accurate, but say there's 20 different A, B, C, D, 20 different lines. And in this particular hair, they were only able to find, say, 9 out of 20 lines that they can identify. Right. And they check yours, and out of those, you have 9 of those same, but there's still, you know, 11 more that we have no idea if they're whose they are. And so, but in any case, so Douglas, Geyser, they don't think you have anything to do with it. They talk about this hair in west of Memphis. They hit a little bit on that. They showed that you were trying to help maybe see if Terry knew anything. And then after that, the internet happened. And if we can, I'd like to, and I know it's rough on you. And I know you've told me before we did this that you don't want to make this about you. But one thing that I want to do, because not just for you, but for the other people this has happened to, if you could talk about how your life has changed from the time this happened until now, when people start pointing fingers at you and accusing you of killing those three little boys.
It's very painful. For one, I'm not the type to do that. I mean, I love kids. I love children. I was a big family, and I feel more comfortable around a big family. I'd never hurt a kid, for one. I can't even spank my own without feeling bad, and I try not to. I mean, growing up, when they needed it, I couldn't give it to them, you know? I mean, I just never have been able to. I've had mine tore up when I was a kid a few times, and it's not the way I've seen it, it's not hard to be mistaken, and you take that whipping, and it's, I don't know how other people deal with it, but it hurts, and it stays with you, and it's something I've told myself since I was a kid getting them whippings that I wasn't going to be like that, and I've kept my word. It's cost me some, you know. I've had my kids were a little bit rambunctious, you know, and probably wouldn't have done as much, you know. I don't want to say mean stuff, but you know,
a little hell raising.
Yeah, they wouldn't have been like that. Maybe if I would have, but it's got me to where, you know, well, it got to the point I really couldn't do anything. I mean, if driving to work, I'd hear it on the radio, you know, coming home, I'd get home, watch the news. I'd hear it on the news. They'd call me on the telephone. It got to the point at work where, you know, I had some pretty good jobs there, and I was responsible for a lot of people, and I had a lot to do. And, you know, I had like, I don't know, 65, 70 guys that I had to watch in Memphis at an airport job. And, you know, I was responsible for their safety. I was responsible for just keep the job on track. I was responsible for, staying on budget. And I enjoyed it, but. Yeah. Once this all blew up, oh God, man, you know, you have strangers walking up to you because they seen your name and they, you know, and here they come with these questions and some wouldn't even bother about the questions. They just say, hey, you want to help kill them kids, aren't you? And people could, you know, like somebody like Hobbs, fuck you, and walk on and not worry about it. But it sticks to me for some reason and I don't like it. It got to the point where I could tell I was losing it at work. I couldn't do my job, and I couldn't keep nothing on my mind, you know, and I was worried, you know, somebody was going to get hurt. Actually, we had a few people that wasn't mine, but they did get hurt. And, you know, I, I had administered first aid to a couple of them. And then I heard that so-and-so said, well, you better watch him. You might not come out of there alive. And it got to where I couldn't take more, you know. And some people that just never heard about it, you know, and they would just hear it from some, you know, asshole that wanted to, you know, make fun of it or light of it or whatever you want to call it. But it was hurtful. And it's, I gave up on it. I mean, I've got a lot of friends there in Memphis, and a lot of them do this kind of work. I mean, I've done several jobs in St. Jude since 1986. If it was built, I was there, I was done, and I had, a lot of friends there, and I hated to be around that. And this come out, and, the people that knew me would tell me, we know that's a bunch of bull, don't worry. But then, the five that knew you, it didn't make up for the 25 that didn't know you. And you walk through the gates, and you see the people, and they're looking at you, and you know what they're thinking. You tell yourself you know what they're thinking, And I slowly faded out of that. My kids, there's one for you. I got a call, and it was in 07. And my oldest son had been, they were pinned down in a ambush in Bangram. He was in Iraq, and this is a day after, and he got to a phone. He called me. He said, Dad, what the hell's going on? These people are up here asking me, what do I know about West Memphis, and why was I out there with them kids, And I mean, he's up there in fucking war, and they're spouting that shit out, and all over the internet and shit, and I don't know. I'm just thankful it didn't get to him enough that he just, just stood up and talked. Because I know I would. I would have probably not forgot where I was at and just stood up and said, what the fuck are they talking about, And they don't realize that what they say, it don't affect just who they're talking to. Who they're talking to has family, And he's got kids, he's got grandkids, he's got a mother. And I don't appreciate it, really. I don't. I don't know what I can do about it. There's nothing I can really do about it. But it's real hurtful and painful and hateful, if you ask me. I mean, I hear a lot of things. So and so did this, so and so did that. But I don't hop to the internet or social media and go pointing fingers, accusing them, tell them, I know, and it's just. I don't know. I don't have no more better words for it. It's ignorant. It's stupid. 100 years from now, that's whatever you want to do. I hear them talk all the time. Jesse James did this. He didn't get caught, but I'm not Jesse James, and it's not in the 1800s. I mean, things are different. And,
After you left Memphis, it followed you here. I mean, you were.
Oh, yeah. It's followed me everywhere I went. I don't try to change my name or hide or nothing like that. I've done nothing to hide, but it's like a reoccurring nightmare every damn day. I mean, you might get a day or two without it, but eventually you run into somebody and if you have to show your license or you give them your name, it triggers an avalanche of bullshit. And, I don't know. I've just withdrawn in my own little circle, I guess is what you might say. Whole different line of work and a whole lot less pay, but it's peaceful for now. But when they, when the word trickles down, these people that just hadn't known me very long, they're not going to know what to believe. And I can't blame them if they got kids. Maybe, if there's a doubt in their mind, there's a million ways it can affect somebody and why they want to do that, knowing And I know they know. I mean, I've seen it myself. I've heard people tell them. I've seen people, you know, post them to them, tag them, whatever they want to call it on the internet, that, you know, what they're doing. You know, actually, it affects more than just that one person that you seem to know, but you don't know, that you never met. And they don't care. They come right back with the vile shit. You know, this Ken Swindle, you know. That man don't know me. I've done nothing to him. I've done nothing to anybody, but he's a lawyer, and he's going to throw me in the mix with this Danny Owens or whatever. He's supposed to be a private detective or something. And I mean, that's
Swindle
crazy,
was the one,
man.
That didn't they subpoena you to what was supposed to be some kind of lawsuit?
Yeah, Pam Hicks and John Mark Byers versus the city of West Memphis to see some evidence. And I'm, you know, when I get the subpoena, I'm worried. What, I don't know nothing about what they got for evidence. What do they do? I don't know what they're talking about. And I thought, well, you know, maybe it's something they want to, you know, maybe they want to know, did I see the bicycles or did I see this? Because I know, you know, they showed where they pulled them out of the water. And I'm steadily thinking, what are they wanting, you know? And so I show up in court like I was subpoenaed to do. I mean, and, they get in there and they go through some of their legal proceedings, which I'm just, they're speaking Greek to me. I don't know what they're talking about, you know. I've been to court on speeding tickets. That's basically about it. And I had not a clue what they were talking about. And then they get towards the ending, and they come up with this supposed letter from a guy in prison that's in prison for 40 years for rape and burglary and some other things. But he claimed that he'd got a confession from a friend of his that actually died a while back. But before he died, he told this guy that himself and me and Terry and one other guy had killed those kids. And I thought, man, you know, I mean, this, to me, I heard the story before. I haven't been able to put it all together, but it was basically a story that was told with either two or three of the kids that was accused of it. And they just took my name and Terry's name and added it in there and took a couple out or took three out and added three in is what it boiled down to. But anyway, these guys never knew me. This lawyer didn't know me. This private detective, if he was a private detective, then he didn't do his job, or he would have seen, you know, they don't know nothing about me yet. They're going to, you know, throw it out there. And to me, what happened is this Owens and Swindle got together. Well, I don't know, you know, other than my name was out there because, you know, Terry and Mark Byers. And then they go and they have go in a little jailhouse talk with one of these four guys, or two of them. I don't know how many they talked to, but I'm sure this is what had happened. And they went and they offered him something, either maybe to help represent him. Maybe he's going to get an appeal or maybe just a lighter sentence or maybe commissary money to write this letter confessing that he heard a confession from a guy that, you know, all this shit went down and I was there and I, you know, helped commit the murders. And, you know, and I'm thinking I've done talk to Rachel Geiser. I've talked to John Douglas. Ron Lax. Well, there's several of them defense people that I've talked to, and I never once shied away from them. But I'm sure that somewhere in there, one of them has gotten with these guys, and Swindle went done his little deed to get this letter written to the prosecuting attorney. The prosecuting attorney seen through the bullshit, so he done nothing about the letter. It's supposedly been there a year, and he said nothing. But anyway, and so the letter goes into court, and I go to court, and once they get through the little talk about seeing evidence and they're denied that, then I think Swindle throws this letter, which the judge already had, but I mean, he throws it out so the media could see it and points at me on camera and tells them I'm a child murderer. I'm the one that, one of the guys that was responsible for that. But like I said, you know, they done talked to me, and in my mind, I'm saying, you know, I know they've checked it. I know they checked it. I was at work. So all this stuff he's talking about me being out in them woods that day and buying alcohol, smoking marijuana, and doing God knows what else. And then then ultimately killing these kids, I'm at work. I mean, I've got proof of that, but it done no good. It's like you're talking to that chair there. I mean, it's
the way you described it to me. It sounded like he stood up in open court with cameras on him, yes, and media, and pointed at you. And
he stood up, and John Mark Byers stood up and pointed at me. And you know, Byers, he don't care if he was in church on Sunday morning. That's if he's got it in his mind, he's going to say something stupid. He's going to say it as loud as he can. And he did right there in court. And so did Ken Swindle, right at the camera, right at me. And I told him I was a child murderer. And I mean, that runs right up there close to when I was thrown the pictures of the boys that were killed in an envelope and told to look at it. And I can't believe I figured that part out on my own, but I did. I figured that was crime scene photos, and I wasn't looking, and I threw them back. And he told me, I did. What's wrong? You don't want to look at your handiwork? And those two feelings I got from there and from that courtroom, it was the same. I mean, I think if I had just a little bit of a heart ailment, I'd have probably keeled over. And, you know, I want to hang on long enough to find out who it was that did it, because I don't want to go and have that pinned on me. I didn't do shit, you know, and I wouldn't. But I don't know why they persist with this, man. But that's the feelings I got from both of those was pretty equal, you know. Being thrown some pictures of some dead boys, one that you knew, and being told on TV that you're a murderer. I mean, I don't know, man. I can't. It's hard to deal with. I wish it was over. I wish it would hurry up and get over.
Well, I think we've covered everything that I want to cover here. I've just got one last question for you, and we'll wrap it up. And
yeah.
The question I have is, this has been really, really hard on you. You've never done an interview like this before. Why did you decide to sit down and interview with me today?
Well, ever since this started, it seems like everybody that come along was there to help me. And I don't ask for help. I don't. I deal with it myself. But I trusted them that they were there to help. Maybe, you know, maybe it was true. Maybe they would help, and maybe they would find, you know, who the answer to this. But most of them, about all of them, come find out, you know, they had their own agenda. They were wanting to sell a book, sell a movie. Sell a jury. I don't know. It's just, you know, I dodged you there for a while, kind of. And it wasn't because I just didn't want to talk or nothing. I don't know who to trust anymore. I'm a sucker for one. I can take his hat off. You'll probably read it across my forehead. Sucker. But I just trusted. I'd talk to Mom. She talked to me, and she told me, "You seem very up and up." And I talked to some other people that me and you both know now, but, you know, and I kept trying to shy away from it, but I can't deal with it much longer. And I don't want to turn that one person down that's going to help. And I hope you're it. I really do. I pray that you're it. I've heard some good stuff about you, and that's, you know, I remember me asking you about where you lived. I got a buddy that lives up there, and he's a real good friend, and I was going to get him to go by and see you and talk to you, and I know it's, you know, I mean, not in any kind of bad way, just, you know, I wanted him to come and talk to you, and just, because I know he knows me, and even though he didn't know me then, he knows me, and he's a lot like me, except he's able to distinguish, you know, a little bit better, you know, good people from bad people. I'm not, I give everybody a shot. I'm not, you know, who am I to judge? I don't never judge people like that. And that's why, I mean, you know, I believe in to do unto others, and I try that, and it's worked for me to a point. But I don't judge not lest ye be judged. I believe in that too. And ever since I was a kid, I've tried to use that, you know, and that's, it's got me a long way, but it won't get me over this hump. And I just hope you're the one to do it. And so I agreed to it because I can't take it.
The 2 hours of interview that you've heard over the last 2 weeks with David were the result of over a year of me getting to know David and working with him and helping him to get a better grasp on his timeline by using techniques taught to me by Jim Clementi, like cognitive interviews, and then we use known markers like historical weather data and police dispatch logs to narrow down all of these times. As you could hear in the interview, all of this was extremely emotional and extremely stressful for David, not only for him to open himself up to public scrutiny once again, but also to put himself through reliving the events of that night all over again. I personally want to thank David for taking the time and putting forth the effort to do whatever he can to hopefully help us solve the case of the forgotten West Memphis 3. As of right now, we need to continue putting pressure onto Scott Ellington via phone, email, social media, to try to convince him to send the evidence to be tested. David is just another victim in this horrible crime whose life has been destroyed and has never had a sense of closure for losing the young boy that he had grown so close to. And the only way that we're ever going to solve this case once and for all is to get the evidence tested. So keep pushing, keep writing, be persistent, and as always, be respectful. Now, as far as where we're going with the podcast from here on out, as of right now, if nothing changes, next week is going to be our conclusion for now of Season 5. I'm going to do a wrap-up episode for where we're at this point in the investigation, and then next week we're going to move into our new case. So Season 8 is going to begin in 2 weeks. But, as I said, we have one more week to wrap things up with the West Memphis 3 case, and we'll be doing that next week on Truth and Justice. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Produced and edited by Mike Bussing and sound engineering by Shane Yoder. All music for the show was created, composed, and scored by PutThemInASong.com, who also mixed and mastered this episode. All of our font across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. I'd like to thank Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Charlena White, Kaywood Yamnick, Ginger Fiola, Edith Swanneck, and Jen Reese in Candela. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in a number of ways. To financially support the show, you can go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. On the Patreon page, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we also have reward levels on Patreon that include access to behind-the-scenes videos of the tapings of our Friday follow-up episodes, ad-free versions of all of our episodes, Truth and Justice Army t-shirts and hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the companies that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email, theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. For all of you tweeters, you can connect with us on Twitter, @TruthJusticePod. I personally can be found on social media at Bob Ruff Truth, and Mike can be found at Murb Gaming, MURRBGAMING. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice.
You were up at 4, baking pastries at 5, and open at 6. 100th cappuccino by 8, 200th customer by 9, and there's still 12 hours to go. That's why you need a business broadband that works as hard as you do. Introducing Sky Business. With 4G internet backup and our stay connected guarantee, that's better business. To find out more, visit skybusiness.com. Sky Fiber only, 30-second 4G activation or one-off credit. New customers, Pro Plus packs only. T's and C's apply.